Welcome to episode 57 of the Hellbound Podcast. I'm Michael Chan. Yes, I am back. Your Mr. Star Trek Discovery is right here today. I don't know where I've been for the last few weeks. My doppelgangers kidnapped me and locked me in a dark, dark place. But I broke out and smashed my way back to Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I'm back with my family. You can hear my son going, eh, right? Yes, he is. And I am here. I am finally here again. And who are you? Who's my lovely co-host here?
Me.
Yeah, you.
I'm Alex Blackburn, the founder of the Hellbound Horror Festival and co-host of the Hellbound Podcast with Michael.
Are you sure you're the real Alex Blackburn?
I don't feel like it. I feel like I feel like I'm outside my own body because I'm not very well at the moment. So yeah.
See, I see, because my doppelgangers warned me about your doppelgangers. So
yeah.
Oh, oh! Why is there a third voice? Why is there a third voice? Oh my! Who is this?
Disembodied voice of podcast that came before this one.
That's my wife. She's my wife. This is Jessica Chan. She's going to be co-host today. Wow.
So, Michael, I wanted to talk to you about a specific film. If that's where you'd like to start.
I would love to. Which one would you like to talk about today?
Well, there's two, but I think we'll hold off on Barbarian until you've both seen it.
Oh, no.
We've all seen it.
Okay, so we'll talk about Smile, and then possibly Barbarian, depending on how long we're running for. But so, why did you want to talk about Smile in particular, Michael?
Have you seen it?
I've seen it. Yeah, we've seen it. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. So I'm gonna read the description of this film first. Okay. After witnessing a bizarre traumatic incident involving a patient, Dr. Rose Cotter starts experiencing frightening occurrences that she can't explain. As an overwhelming terror begins taking over her life, Rose must confront her troubling past in order to survive and escape her horrifying new reality. I'm going to warn everybody today. I'm actually going to spoil stuff, and here's the reason why. Normally, I don't like spoiling movies, especially because I normally want people to watch a movie for themselves. But I'm going to start off by saying this movie is so crap. let me clarify that. It's so crap that I don't think anyone should watch it. Now, before I move on, I must say that for most of the film, it's actually not crap. If this film had stuck its landing, I would have given it a 9 out of 10. But it chose in the last 5 minutes to completely derail everything it worked towards and has an ending that is so bad that it is not worth giving this movie time. It's not worth giving this movie money. It's so disrespectful to women, especially, that I think that I am shocked at the misogyny inherent in that ending. I'm so shocked that this movie was able to A, be made nowadays, and B, actually get a good critical review at all after that ending. That, yeah, I'm just shocked. I just don't think anyone should be supporting this film after that ending.
I'm the guest star. I'll wait till
next. So the film is basically about a woman seeing someone kill themselves. And this person had been describing seeing a being, seeing something that's essentially smiling, but this being takes the form like a shapeshifter of people in their life, right? And this person who kills himself had also seen someone kill themselves.
No, died in front of them. Her grandfather died in front of them when they were. Before they killed.
No, the professor killed himself.
The original person that she meets, the woman,
the
says
professor
she takes many forms, including the grandfather who I saw die in front of me when I was 7.
Are we talking about
two people? She's seen two people die.
That is fair. She has seen two people die. No, but I'm saying, I'm not even talking about, now you're going further into the film. I'm talking about the inciting incident right at the beginning. The story says that she saw someone die. Not the grandfather, but the professor who knocked himself.
Oh, you're going later.
No, you're going later.
Right away.
She does not.
She saw someone kill himself. Oh, they talk.
See, now we're even.
Ladies,
doesn't matter. I don't give a crap. The whole thing, the reason how the thing got transferred to her, how the actual being got transferred to her was from when she saw a professor kill himself with a hammer, which is described by the police right at the beginning of the film, along with the other doctor saying that she saw a professor kill himself. Nothing to do with the grandfather, which was actually came after the professor hitting himself with a hammer.
Yeah, but she mentioned that in her initial interview as one of the first things.
There's multiple things that happened.
Okay.
But when they brought her in and said that she should...
She had young trauma, childhood trauma.
I was getting to that later in this episode. This is why it's difficult. We're
keeping all this in, everyone.
This is also how I know she's a doppelganger now. And I came home because somebody wouldn't like
this. No, you do never.
No, you.
You're like, come on,
shut up.
You're like, please stop
talking. I didn't say you want to stop talking. Why don't you then describe the film to the audience? No, you go. See, this is the episode where you see a married couple argue like a married couple.
The real horror show.
Yeah, this
well,
is
you actually... know, you know, when I've been recording the last few weeks of dissecting Dharma with Vic, they all of this chatter gets cut out, but this is being kept in.
Thankful.
Okay, so thankful. Describe the being, since clearly I'm not describing it right.
I got confused, and then I was trying to explain something, and then you're talking about. Anyway, there's two factors to this thing. One, everybody who mentions it experienced some kind of grief or trauma earlier in their life.
Yes.
And two, it was always passed on from one person commits suicide in front of the other, and that's how it gets you.
Right.
But they make a point of mentioning, like, very casually in conversation whenever she's investigating this, that she's like, oh, he lost his brother and he never recovered. I saw my grandfather die in front of him when I was 7. So they always make a point to mention... whenever, not just that they saw someone recently kill themselves in front of them, but they had some kind of childhood trauma that they were affected by.
Well, Dr. Potter starts experiencing exactly what her patient experiences. So she starts seeing the being and starts seeing people in her life who are smiling and essentially saying that she's gonna die.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, the rest of the film is trying to figure out what this thing is and how to end its being passed on. And for the entirety of the film, leading up to the last 5 minutes, meaning leading up to the ending, it is so good. Like, it is, it's good drama, it's good acting. There's even good jump scares. There's a lot in this film.
The visuals are like really, they stick with you. They're very disturbing.
Yeah, everything's very disturbing. It's really good horror. And what like this film talks about, the subject matter it's to deal with is mental illness, trauma. But also there's a sense of, like, you know, like women are always telling, come on, smile, right? So it's tackling mental illness and misogyny in our society. And once we get to the end, the expectation of something happens. When you choose as a filmmaker to deal with mental illness, especially, and how to overcome societal expectations of women that are not appropriate, you would expect that the message should be it is able to be overcome. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Well, they chose in the last 5 minutes to throw away any possibility of a good, proper message in favor of basically having our hero lose and setting up a sequel, if one is ever made.
I was going to say, you forgot to mention that they make it a point of her avoiding dealing with the trauma of seeing her mother die.
Thank you. You're right.
Throughout the film.
Yes.
So the implication being like, this is what the monster's feeding on, because unresolved trauma that she has about her mother's death, which we eventually go to find out is because her mother asked for her help because she OD'd.
Yeah.
Accidentally, because she's a drug addict. And then she was so scared of this woman because she traumatized, like she obviously was abusive,
yeah.
That she didn't call for help and her mother died, which she's carried around. And eventually she faces the monster, the demon that takes the form of her mother. And she's like, I was a child and I'm terrified, but it's not my fault and I'm done feeling guilty about it. So it's like, oh, look, she finally like stood up to this thing and she set it on fire. And she's like, F you. You know, I'm going to confront this trauma head on. And then they're like, sorry, you can't overcome trauma. She died.
No, but on top of all of that, one of the things is when you're dealing with trauma and mental illness and stuff like this, you can't go at it alone. You need to seek help. And that was another thing. She kept trying, essentially.
She pushed everyone away, which is fine, except she's a psychiatrist. So
right, but right at the end of the movie, she seeks help.
You think she seeks help, but it's actually the demon.
Yeah, it's the demon helping with her. So by the end of this film, in the last 5 minutes, the message it said was, mental trauma can never be overcome.
Don't bother.
Don't bother. Just kill yourself.
Yeah, that's what it comes to.
And also, misogyny is never going to go away. You're effed.
Well, I don't know if that was a misogyny thing. It's more like people are like, oh, you're not depressed. Just smile more. Just put a happy face on. Happy thoughts.
I've been thinking a lot about it, and I do agree that there is that aspect of mental illness it was dealing with.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that they chose the female perspective to go at it from, because
it seemed like it was half men, half women when they did the chain back.
Oh, the chain is definitely the monster is definitely going after men and women. I just felt that it was interesting to come at it from a woman's perspective, because it is something that women are told to do all the time. Like, come on, smile. On top of the mental illness, just you know, things will be okay. Just smile. So it's a lot of that.
Also, like, a really, really dark thing is that she passes it on the end to her friend, her boyfriend, her ex, who's a white cop.
Yeah.
And we find out later, like, the only way to get rid of it is just to, like just kill someone while someone watches. And then it bypasses you. And I'm like, oh, a white cop in America just has to kill someone and get away with it? Yeah, that's probably, he's fine. He'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely. Oh, yeah. So the way for you not to die, if this thing has passed to you, is to actually murder someone. You have to murder someone in front of someone else, so that they have the trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts to unravel, doesn't it? I think that it was on, like, in terms of purely a marketing front, I thought, wow, this is going to be one of those movies that, you know, going to get cult status, it's going to be big, but possibly bigger than that. And I just thought, you know, the idea of someone smiling, that act itself is scary, while onto a winner. And we felt pretty much exactly the same way you did. And we were like really disappointed. And then looking into it, it was originally going to be a Paramount Plus original. And then they thought, oh, we've got something stronger than this. We're going to put it out to cinemas. So I'd be really interested to know if the director or the original intent was to have that ending, or was it to open it up for a sequel, and this is kind of the awful way they did it.
Basically, had they not had that twist right at the very end, so if the movie ended, her beating the thing, going to see, you know, the man that she was seeking help, and then that's where it ended. And he's like, okay, you can sleep on the couch, but whatever. All of that stuff right at the end, and it all turned out well, and that's exactly where the movie ended. This would have been a 9 out of 10.
Or if the house had burnt down and they ended it slightly earlier, they don't need to go to the flat, just tighten
the
film.
I agree with you. I'm just saying that for me, it was nice to see her going to someone.
Nice to see someone getting better.
Yeah, because as someone who has sought help for my own mental health issues, I think it's important to see that.
And if you want, like, I see a lot of, I love reading comment sections, and a lot of people are like, oh, what, so it's just a happy ending? I don't know what horror movies people are watching, but I rarely watch horror movies where there's a happy ending. It always ends badly. And they were saying this was refreshing, that it was like a twist and she dies. I mean, that's typical horror movies since, like, decades ago. Oh, you thought they escaped and then she didn't. Like, isn't every horror movie end like that?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's exactly, not refreshing to me. So I don't know what horror movies most of these people are watching. But the other thing is, I liked someone in Reddit, I can't take credit for this comment, but I don't know the Redditor's name, was saying, what's realistic, if you want realism and to deal with the mental health trauma, is that, yeah, she defeats it, and then you can see her living her life with her ex, but see the smile demon around her. Because when it comes to trauma, you can face it and you can work through it, but it's always there. You can't just banish it from your life. You live with this forever. So I would have liked, that's a nice, horrifying ending, but it is realistic to trauma, is that you can live with it. You can keep going. It'll still be there. It'll still be a part of your life, but you don't, it don't have, it doesn't have to defeat you.
That's the stronger message. And you can easily have a sequel by throwing those little elements of doubt that she's still working through it, even though she's got through what you perceive as the main part of it, the main part of her recovery. You could easily throw in elements of doubt for the audience that she's fully recovered, or she's still kind of, it's a lot exists alongside her and she's kind of, you know, kept it away. Easily do a sequel that way, or easily hint at one. And to do it that way is like, okay, yeah. And to be honest, a happy ending when you're dealing with mental illness or your poor mental health, it's not necessarily a happy ending if you've gone through it, because you're still going to be recovering in some ways. You're still going to have fallout from that.
Well, also, like, what's the happy ending? She gifted her nephew a dead cat and then, like, broke, like, fell into a thing and, like, had a meltdown in front of her sister and all her friends. Like, there's going to be repercussions. She probably would get let go from her job, because she basically kind of almost went after, you know, a client. Like,
yep.
It's really a happy ending, even if she survived.
Yeah, because her whole life unraveled.
She lost her fiance, who turned out to be a jerk, so good riddance, but...
I mean, it's A-Train. Of course it's going to be a jerk from the movies.
Yeah.
But... like, I don't know. I just find... I would be curious to know the people that have problems with it. And the people who don't, I'd be curious to know about the lives of people who are like, yeah, I love that it's a terrible ending. I'm like, have you had anyone in your life with mental illness, or have you suffered from mental illness? Because I do wonder if that's maybe like where that comes from, because I just don't really understand that.
Yeah, well, good for those of you who have not experienced mental illness, or have people in your life experiences that you actually feel bad for, you know, it's nice. Isn't it nice that you don't have to deal with this stuff?
Well, I don't know. I'm just curious if that's where they're coming from, because, like, to me, the message was pretty awful and pretty obvious. So to want a bad ending in that scenario, I have to question, like, where do you come from in life? Like, I do want to know their background, because it'd be interesting to know, like, what their life story is, and to see if maybe they've just never been touched by mental health issues, which, I mean, you know, that's great, but... also, I mean, ugh.
And on the same back-to-back evenings, Vic and I moved on to a different film, and that film for me is one of my favorite films of the year. We don't have to go into it fully, but
just glad you chose that, because I feel like these two juxtapose against each other. Like,
yeah, Barbarian
is done, trauma done. Right, like the exploration of a horrific real-life thing, but done in a good way, I think.
It is.
What was the production budget of... I just brought that up somewhere. For Smile was...
$17 million.
I don't... is it just the visual effects? I don't understand where that money went.
It went into the last 5 minutes.
But then you've got Barbarian, which is $9.5 million budget.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And how did you get Dustin Long? Like, come on.
that was one of the smartest marketing ploys they put out there, because it was a Justin Long-led trailer originally. you know, he's driving the car. It was all positive. And instantly my mind goes to Jeepers Creepers. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be another twisted Justin Long horror film. And then you've got, you know, Bill Skarsgård, and what's his price going to be? Because his cachet is massive, right, in horror. Mm-hmm. After Pennywise and all of that, and you know, the other stuff he's done. So his stock's massive. His family name's massive. So, you know, I was really shocked.
Stop this thing on an iPhone. Come on.
Is it spoilers? I don't know how many of you spoiler in the but like, I love the way this movie played with the casting in a way, because everybody knows Justin Long as like, nice guy. He's Mr. Mac. Like, oh, he's so lovely. Yeah. And Bill Skarsgård is is it Bill? No, sir. What's his name?
I think it's Bill. Let me check that.
Pennywise.
Yeah, he's Pennywise. Anyways, he's Pennywise. So he's like, and he has kind of a sinister look about him, even without the evil clown makeup.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed how they played with the casting in that and your expectations. I don't know if we're being spoiler free.
Yeah. So
I think we can dip into the spoilers because it's been out long enough now.
I just think this movie is what Smile should have been, right? Now, obviously, it deals with the trauma and mental illness, but also deals with misogyny at a much higher level. Like, it's much more.
Yeah, this is definitely. I wouldn't say this is a mental illness thing. This is it's female. It's definitely about the patriarchy, and then with a very big undercurrent of race.
Where Smile is, there's like it's mostly mental illness and all that with its slight undertone of dealing with misogyny. I feel this the other way around. It's all about the patriarchy and misogyny, and then there's a bit of the trauma.
In terms of how I felt about this film and how much I enjoyed it and how I liked the really twisted. Different plot points. It reminded me of how much I enjoyed Don't Breathe, because there's really. Have you both seen that?
I've seen
that. Yeah.
When you've with the whole thing in the basement, and you've got the situation where he's trying to baste someone. You know, it's like it reminds me so much of kind of a series of violations, and. It's just absolutely horrific because there's a serial killer in, not serial killer, but basically a serial killer called Joseph Fritzl from Austria, who kept his daughter in the basement and his wife knew about it. And then he fathered children through her. And then it was a series of like, you know, it was a horrific, horrific thing in the news. And just my mind went straight there. I kind of knew straight away in my head, as soon as I saw Bill Skarsgård, I knew it wasn't going to go down the route of him being evil.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious. It was like an easy kind of like, oh, let's just change this.
I loved about one I read about this, the writer, his idea for the Bill Skarsgård scene was he once wrote a book about red flags in first dates or something, and he's like, how many red flags can I fit into this situation in one scene? So that's how he wrote that scene. But I kind of love how in terms of casting and stuff, it's that like each male we encounter in this film, save for the poor homeless man, is like a certain level of misogyny, and it goes down. So the first guy built, like the first guy she encounters is actually quite nice, but he doesn't listen to her. Like he says, she's like, this is bad. We got to get out of here right now. And he's like, he doesn't believe her that this is really bad. We need to leave. And because of that, things go badly. And then you have the Justin Long character who's, you know, an obvious slime ball, but then he's confronted with a real life horrific guy, and he's like, he doesn't see himself in that either. When he meets him, he's like, what's wrong with you? Not recognizing that he is just also a terrible person. Like, I just, you know what I mean? It's like different levels of misogyny in each of these characters, which I thought was really interesting.
I did quite enjoy how it, you thought he was gonna kind of reverse the type of guy he was when he was confronted with the situation, and it slowly kind of builds up to the fact, no, he's just going to be an asshole the entire way through. And I there's certain things like.
Oh, I was going to say, what's interesting is that Justin Long's character sees the horror and the evil of the I guess the patriarch, yet somehow doesn't see the problem in himself. So
he does for a second before he yeets her off.
Yeah, but that's so typical of men. Where
you'll
self-reflect even for a second, but,
but then it's inconvenient for you to actually be the better person, so you just totally distract immediately. Yeah, sorry, you were saying, Alan?
No, I was gonna kind of switch it up, and my question, I loved her character. I thought she was excellent, and then the biggest suspension of disbelief wasn't that she stayed there. It wasn't that she left. I thought, you can just leave now. Go somewhere else. I'm sure, just sleep in your car. That was our idea. Go and sleep in your car in the city. You know, if the police stop you, just move on. That was where my head went. But then as soon as you were standing at the top of those stairs, or even the first door that opens in the basement, you go, nah, I'm not going in there. And it wasn't that she was a brave character. It was just that it's really fucking stupid to do that.
Yeah.
Then as soon as you see that other door, and that other, as soon as you see a carved entrance into earth, you should know something's up, right?
I like someone's interpretation, and I don't know if this is actually where the writers were going, but the fact that I think she mentioned something about a bad breakup when she started their first little date, and about losing herself in a guy. And someone was saying, like, this woman's, like, she keeps putting men's above her own safety against her better judgment and going into dangerous situations for their sake. And they felt like when she confronts the, like, quotations monster at the end and she's crying about that, it's like her letting go of that part of herself. Like, I'm done being or putting men ahead of myself.
That's interesting,
Like her moment of recognition of that, because like looking in the face of what these men have wrought and what they've created and put into this world, she's not going to do that anymore. Which I don't know if that was the original intent, but I like that interpretation.
That is really interesting. Yeah. My particular favorite moment of this film is when he's measuring the house.
Oh, sorry.
You know when he.
Diaper change. He's unhappy.
That's okay.
Okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
My favorite moment of the film is when he's measuring the house with a tape measure.
Oh my god!
And then it's one of the funniest things because there's a Casey Neistat video on YouTube where he's on this fly Emirates plane to go to, I think it's Dubai or something like that, and he's using a tape measure to measure the cabin because it's massive. And there's a bathroom and all sorts. And it's like that in terms of the way it's edited together. And then as soon as he opens the first door, he's got no doubt about measuring it. And then as soon as you see that old, VHS camera, or Betamax camera, I'm like, you got to question that.
Dude, he measures the cage room.
Yeah, he doesn't even notice the dog cage. I love this. There's so many layers in this film because that's what he was saying in that conversation they have with over their wine date. Is like you men just barrel into every situation. You don't have to, or never. Like you have to be cautious. We do. We have to second guess every single thing we do.
Exactly.
Because there's danger around every corner for us.
Yeah.
And they just. Sorry.
That's all right.
I change.
I don't think they're actual. I think they are dog cages, but I think they actually kept his. Depending on how the generational thing works and who the mother person really is, if it's like a third daughter of a daughter kind of thing, is if he kept the earlier generations of children in those cages.
I thought the interesting thing about that too was that they portray her, like one of the other things I noticed they were good about is they portrayed her as like monstrous, but she wouldn't go near that old man's room.
Yeah, she scared the old man, and she could rip him in half.
Yeah.
At any point, she could get away from him, but she's too afraid of him.
Yeah, I love that scene when she was backing up from the doorway. I love that.
Because it also was really scary.
It is scary.
Yeah.
In the tunnel.
Have you seen some of the marketing that the T-shirt with the bottle of milk with hair on it?
Oh no! That was so gross.
Yeah, I have to be really careful, you know, with horror T-shirts especially. Can I wear this at work? That's usually my judgment whether I buy something.
I wouldn't be able to wear that anywhere. Except a horror festival.
Yeah.
And even then, not everyone would know what that is.
No, you go dressed as a bottle of milk, like a big bottle of milk with arms sticking out with hair on top. That's the move.
I've seen the big bottle of milk costume.
There you go. There's your horror.
I'm here to it. I think I've just scared my son to the point where he's like, you know what, Baba, no. Baba, no. No, no, no. No big bottle of milk with hair on it. No.
I got a lot of enjoyment from that film. I thought, I really, really dug it. And I love the casting of, what's the actor called? The father figure. He killed Batman's parents in Batman Begins. Joe Chill, his character was, I think.
Sorry, I'm going on Google looking it up.
I'm curious. How much do you know about, how does this play outside of, North America?
Richard.
A lot of this movie kind of relied on this, knowing about white flight in the 1950s and stuff.
I'd lose kind of track of that, but I think because of watching a North American cinema. Just Richard Brake is the actor, Richard Brake. But yeah, I kind of understood that enough, and I loved how vibrant, how kind of almost like Erie, Indiana, that street was. You know, was it the 50s or 60s?
It was.
But I loved that, yeah.
That film was so incredibly, it's just so incredibly, incredibly made.
Layers, lots of layers.
Yeah, and it makes you think. It actually makes you think. And then sticks the landing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was really tragic in the end, and I don't know. I really like the ending of the film.
Anyone wants to have a sequel for this thing, which I hope never happens, I mean, for all we know, that the quote unquote monster could have survived, or there could be another one. Oh, do you remember that line they said? There's the homeless man said they're monsters, plural.
He said that she's not the worst thing.
Oh, sorry. There. Yeah, she's not the worst.
Message to say I thought he was talking about the man that was down there. He's
sorry,
definitely
yes.
The worst thing down there.
That's right, yeah.
That was the line. They're worst things down there.
She's not even the worst thing
down there. And you as an audience member immediately assume there are tons of other monsters down there, when in reality all he's really talking about, we think, is the old man.
Disgusting.
Yeah, I love the cinematography. There's some really simple things like when Justin Long's in the cage with the main kind of female lead, and he's not drinking the milk. And they use a very wide angle lens for when the milk is being pushed in his face and he's not taking a drink, and I just love little flourishes of kind of detail like that. And it is grim, it's absolutely grim. I'd have been on that bottle straight away.
You know what I mean? Well, I would have done anything they asked me to do to stay alive.
I one of the things that'll stick me in this movie is the horror and tragedy of her booping the woman's nose and saying,
oh my God,
Baba.
Yeah.
Baba. Yeah. It's just so scary and creepy, but also just so tragic. The whole thing, it was so well done.
It's a good sign of I think quite an entertaining and when you're really into a horror film especially, is what would I do in this situation? Yes. I think there's a, you know, if you can get that, if you can get an audience to start thinking like that, I think you're going to have a successful film. But I really loved it. Absolutely loved
what
it.
I would have done is if I saw the room, the video equipment in it, I would have been like, damn, this is a good place to rent out for to Hollywood. Make some money off of renting that room out. It's so creepy. Ooh. They can make Saw 16 in that.
Just underground square footage count in the
I'm sorry, that section of the film was brilliant.
Was brilliant, yeah,
but also the messaging and
at one point
9.5 out of 10, man.
I love that Luke pointed out he grabbed the laptop and like tried one password and then just tossed it on the bed. He's like, that's too much effort for me.
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Was it? Yeah, he threw it onto the bedside cupboard, didn't he?
Yeah,
and it landed perfectly. Try
and break it in and then just gave up immediately.
Yeah, which is hilarious and so typical.
I don't know.
This is the second time we've seen him in a horror movie.
Playing he's
good.
Is the other one that Kevin Smith thing? The Tusk.
I forgot what it's called. The vampire one.
Yeah, that one wasn't very good.
I already forgot. It's the vampire one. I wish we could talk about it, but then again, I got kidnapped by doppelgangers, so lost time.
I think setting up the desperation he had going on in his head, because obviously, you know, he was of what the shitty kind of person he is. And then he goes to his accountant or business manager or whoever the character is and says, you've got like 2 months, this spending rate, you've got 2 months left of your money. And setting up his desperation is fantastic. And
it was.
I loved how they slowly peeled back his image. Like at the beginning you could kind of maybe like, oh, maybe it was a misunderstanding. I mean, I didn't think that, obviously. So I was just like, but they didn't really definitively tell you anything, and then you get to that bar scene where he's like, she said no, but you know, I'm persistent. And you're like, I'm starting to see, you know. I like how they kind of slowly revealed his grossness.
But no, they kind of that was the moment, wasn't it? When if you had any doubt that he wasn't a gross individual, you are. He is awful. And then it's like, do I want the awful evil things to happen to him? Yeah, probably. And then there's elements where you go back and forth the way the direction his character goes in. You think, is he going to be a hero of the piece? You know what I mean? So I loved all that kind of back and forth and. That montage scene, especially measuring things up, was absolutely brilliant.
Can I voice my one pet peeve with this movie, which is a pet peeve for all horror movies? Horror movies, I feel like, have indoctrinated us into never helping people. You know, you get these news stories where they're like, she sat on the side of the road for 2 hours and no one stopped to help. But I'm like, that's horror movies. That poor homeless man. Every horror movie, they're like, if you stop and help someone, someone's going to pop out of nowhere and, like, beat you to death. Like, they train us to be like, well, I don't want to stop. No, I'm going to get killed if I stop and help.
Yeah.
It is so true. Every single horror movie, and not just horror, even thrillers now, if there's a good Samaritan. Oh, yeah, you're right. If there's a good Samaritan, I'm like, they're going to die.
And they die horribly.
The worst, most undeserved death.
I feel like there's like a campaign in horror movies to try and convince us to never stop and help our fellow man in danger. Because they're always like, oh, you're going to get murdered by, like, some serial killer if you do.
Yeah. It's not a good thing, obviously, for how the police acted in this, because it was horrific. Like, doubting her straight away. Is it the gas station or petrol station here?
Thinking she was a drug addict. That's just great.
Yep.
But as soon as you know, if someone's dirty and you just assume that she's a drug addict, there's, you know, police should be trained enough that they have their own teeth. They're, you know, they're eloquent in terms of how they speak. They're not slurring their words. So really shitty police they've got there in this film, you know?
But she's a black woman on the street. Yeah. So of course they're going to ignore her.
Are both the officers white?
She's a drug addict. Those are the ones that are most likely to be targeted by someone like that. They are the most vulnerable. So
you're about to mention the ethnicities of the police officers.
Yeah, where there was one black and one white.
Yeah, but that's actually a very good commentary on the fact that once you become a police, part of the police,
you're kind of part of that crew, yeah.
Culture, it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is, you're still a part of it. Like, I'm not going to name names and talk about ethnicities, but I have an acquaintance who is a police officer, and the person they were and that I met ages ago and the person they've become are two completely different people. Like, I'm not saying this person didn't have, clearly they had the potential to become what they've become, but as a police officer, they are a gun nut. And they're Canadian. They are an absolute gun nut, to the point where they have their child wearing clothing that talks about gun rights being human rights.
Wow.
They're indoctrinating your own child into this whole gun-loving culture. So, I'm just saying there is a problem with police
culture. That's a really good way to explain it.
So even in this, I'm just going to say this person I'm talking about is not white. So
so the blue wall of silence or whatever. It's a very well known, at least in the States. I'm sure it's the same in Canada. Like, if you dare speak out against a fellow officer for misbehavior, you're going to get
trouble. Look, I don't believe in getting rid of the police. I just believe in reforming the way they function, and then using the money that normally is given to them, especially to buy, like, essentially militarize them, which is ludicrous.
Oh my God, yeah.
On social services and also on training personnel that maybe are not police officers, but at least trained to handle high-stress, dangerous situations as counselors or whatever. So that we have multiple, what's the word I'm trying to,
avenues of
de-escalation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really fascinating, actually, because the police in the US especially, this could have easily happened in the 60s and 70s in terms of how much kind of military, hardware they had. But instead of bringing stuff back from the Vietnam War, they pushed it off boats. They got rid of the helicopters. Anything they had, they kind of disposed of. So a lot of that stuff that came back, even the weapons, the armored vehicles that certain police departments have, it isn't just surplus that's made in the US. It's brought back because it's actually cost effective. You can just bring it back. But in the 1670s, they just dumped it off the side of aircraft carriers. Oh. So it's really fascinating to see where that goes. And that attitude situation is that blue wall you talk about, Jess, is makes complete sense in this, especially. Yeah, but it's really good. Is it set in Detroit, this, as well, isn't it?
That was like they were a big victim of like the white flight, is what they call it. Like, all the white people left and just basically abandoned the city. And
yeah, because I know about the stuff with the water supply and, like you're saying about the earlier scene, the flashback stuff being super bright and Stepford Wives kind of thing. It's really that's one of the most interesting moments for me, is when you see those scenes and he's just going back to his house and the neighbor's about to sell up. And then I love how you don't see the street at night at the beginning and then you later.
Yeah, and I also like that. I mean, that's why I was wondering. I was curious to what you thought of that. Was like, with any time with these movies where you have like a killer that's not caught, you think, well, how did he get away with it this long? But it was brilliant for me, I guess, for American audiences to be like, yeah, it's Detroit. Like, he could do whatever he wants. No one's
exactly.
Gonna, because those communities or certain communities were so abandoned by social services and like and he's preying on probably like very vulnerable people that society has just deemed unworthy of help, right?
So, yeah, that feeds into the police not wanting to go there as well.
And obviously, I mean, the poor homeless man. Obviously, he's a good guy, but he's futile. He's like, I'll just stay clear, like, and try and warn her. Not to go in there. Like, he's a good guy. So I'm sure he tried to do something at some point, but, you know, what can you do?
But yeah, this is just a brilliant film because we're getting a little long in the episode, so we have to bring it to a close. I was saying earlier, I give this movie a 9.5 out of 10. It is one of the best horror films I've ever seen and definitely the best this year.
Yeah, totally agree. Absolutely agree. What do you think, Jess? What are your final comments?
This was such a good two films to put together because it's just, how do you address real life horrors in a responsible manner in a way that makes you think, like, this is how you do it. Smile is definitely not, you do not use a real life trauma and that people suffer from just to push your own little like scary twist ending. Like, that's not responsible filmmaking as far as I'm concerned. Whereas I feel like this Barbarian was definitely the opposite. It was really good. Really made you think. Like, I haven't thought about, I thought this deep, like, since watching maybe Get Out, like Jordan Peele's movie.
Get Out is...
No, but I mean, like equivalent, I feel like a thoughtful, like...
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Get Out is definitely a makes you think.
Yeah, I feel like this is kind of the first one that's kind of gotten that close to, like, a Get Out feeling in a while, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. This has been great. This has been really great.
All right, everybody. So, thank you for being present for my return from being kidnapped by doppelgangers. Also, thank you very much for being here to celebrate the coming onto the show of my wife. She is awesome.
And thank you guys for adding great ambient background noise for a movie with creepy breastfeeding videos.
Yes.
And the couple's fractious little argument, that was fantastic as well.
That was totally not faked. Yeah. All right. So, everybody, thank you again. And if you like what you're listening to, you please consider following us on Instagram. We are on social media as @TheHellboundPodcast. We would love to feature your artwork or any of your horror-related things. So if you'd like to be featured on our Instagram, please send us a private message over there, and we'll give you a mention. Also, every subscription, every follow helps. And if you can, and if you feel so inclined, please give us a very positive 10 out of 10, 5 stars out of 5 stars review on your podcast platform. That will get us up there as well to get more listeners and allow us to do a lot more with our podcast. Again, our social media is @TheHellboundPodcast, Harness to Darkness.